So, yes, thank you. I'm just going to reread James 2 again. We've had quite a bit since Jeffrey read it so well, so I just thought I'd refresh our mind on it. My brothers and sisters, what good is it for people to say they have faith if their actions do not prove it? Can that faith save them? Suppose there are brothers and sisters who need clothes and don't have enough to eat. What good is there in you saying to them, God bless you, keep warm and eat well, if you don't give them the necessities of life? So it is with faith. If it is alone and includes no actions, then it is dead. But someone will say, one person has faith, another has actions. My answer is, show me how anyone can have faith without action. I will show you my faith by my actions. Do you believe that there is only one God? Good. The demons also believe and tremble with fear. You fool. Do you want to be shown that faith without actions is useless? How was our ancestor Abraham put right with God? It was through his actions when he offered his son Isaac on the altar. Can't you see his faith and his actions work together? His faith was made perfect through his actions. And the scripture came true that said Abraham believed God, and because of his faith, God accepted him as righteous. And so Abraham was called God's friend. You see then that it is by people's actions that they are put right with God, and not by their faith alone. It was the same with the prostitute Rahab. She was put right with God through her actions, by welcoming the Israelite spies and helping them escape by a little rope. So then, as the body without the spirit is dead, so also faith without action is dead. So, James has been on my mind for quite a while, and although I've wanted to speak about it, it's quite a difficult thing because I'm not very good at this. Because it is very difficult to put things into practice. It can be scary. You're putting yourself out there, and you can, you know, suffer ridicule if you do something. People might think you're dark for doing. So it's quite tricky to do and put it into all aspects of your life. So for me to stand here and talk about it, please don't get me wrong, I have not got this sorted by any means. So please bear with me. So, as you can see, I've got Dead or Alive up there. It's from a wanted poster. And I kind of thought, as James is quite blunt about our actions, are we going to have a faith that is alive, or do we have a faith that is dead? So the first thing I wanted to say was that James can be completely misunderstood and misread. He's often said that he tells us that we've got to do stuff to be saved. That's not true. And also, he can be thought of as sort of dismissing grace, but actually he doesn't in any way, and he says the same thing as Paul says, and as Jesus says in the Gospels as well, and he's just a little bit more blunt and less eloquent than Paul when he says it. So if you in Ephesians 2:8, Paul says, "For it is by God's grace that you have been saved through your faith. It is not the result of your own efforts, but God's gift, so that no one can boast about it. God has made us what we are, and in our union with Christ Jesus, he has created us for a life of good deeds, which he has already prepared us to do." So he's saying that if we have faith and if we are saved by grace, then we will put that into practice and act on it. And as I said, I think James is a little bit blunt and less eloquent than Paul when he says things. So how do we put that faith into action? I think the first thing is, and Margaret spoke very well about it a few weeks ago, is that we've got to be equipped. If we're not prepared and we're not equipped to do things, then we can't put those actions into that faith into action. And when I was thinking about this, I was reminded of school, in the summer term we played cricket. And if you're going to play cricket properly, you need a load of kit to do it. You need your pads, your bats, your gloves, your box, you name it, you need it to play cricket. And one of my friends, who in our first term of summer term, went out and bought all the best kit. He had the best bats at the time, he had the best pads, he spent money. He went to one practice session, couldn't even catch a ball, and then went off and played tennis instead. So he had all this kit sat in one of these huge coffin grey kit bags, and he did nothing. He didn't use it. And that can be us. We can have all the knowledge and the faith, But if we don't put it into action, it is about as much use as that cricket kit was in my mate's bedroom. So it never served the purpose for which it was designed. And I think that's one of the things. We come to church and we've got to listen to what God says to us in the Bible, but then we have to go out and put it into use. In Matthew 24, verses 14 to 30, which will come up now, it's the parable of the talons or the coins. And I'll just read it because I think it's quite important to see what it says. So at that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like this. Once there was a man who was about to go on a journey. He called his servants and put them in charge of his property. He gave it to each one according to his ability. To one he gave 5,000 gold coins, to another 2,000, and to another he gave 1,000. Then he left on his journey. The servant who had received 5,000 went at once and invested the money and earned another 5,000. In the same way, the servant who received 2,000 coins earned another 2,000. But the servant who had received 1,000 coins went off, dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants came back and settled his accounts with them. The servant who had received 5,000 coins came in and handed over the 5,000. You gave me 5,000 coins, sir, he said. Look, here is another 5,000 that I have earned. Well done, you good and faithful servant, said his master. Then the servant who had received 1,000 coins came in and said, sir, I know you are a hard man. You reap harvests where you did not scatter seed. I was afraid, so I went off and hid your money in the ground. Look, here is what belongs to you. You bad and lazy servant, his master said. You knew, did you, that I reap harvest where I did not sow and gather crops where I did not scatter seed? Well then, you should have deposited my money in the bank, and I would have received it back with interest when I returned. Now take the money away from him and give it to the one who has 10,000 coins. But to every person who has something, even more will be given, and he will have more than enough. But the person who has nothing, even the little that he has will be taken away from him. As for this useless servant, throw him outside in the darkness. There he will cry and grind his teeth. So if we choose to be like that third servant, so we get given the gift that we celebrated the communion a few minutes ago, but then don't go out and share it with others, then we're taking that and being very selfish. So I guess nowadays, I mean, obviously here we've got an example of money and investing that Jesus used, but what does that sort of look like to us now? Obviously, quite brilliantly, Rachel shared a few moments ago about her trip to the Amazon, but to be able to do that, she needed to be a qualified dentist. They wouldn't take me to do that, no way. Because of the study, I think 5 years at university and then 2 in practice, so not a short, quick course. But then was to be able to go out and sort of give something back for that being equipped by being training up to be a dentist. Now, we're not all going to be dentists. Some of us can't even look at teeth. Lucy. Some of us seem to lose teeth fairly quickly, myself. So probably not a good example. But we can be equipped for various things, and that can vary quite a lot. The fact that on Wednesday we'll be doing the light parade, when we started that and had those initial discussions, none of us had a clue how we were going to build these structures that we were then going to light up, how we were going to light them, how we were going to power them, carry them, etc. And I think you found about a 10-minute video on YouTube, yeah? Which we all sat down and watched, and from that we were then able to learn how to make them ourselves. We practiced a bit. We then took them out to the scouts and showed them, and in a few minutes they were envisaging some very impressive structures, some of which we got carried away with and had to dismantle. The seahorse comes to mind. It wasn't to scale. We didn't need any special qualifications to equip ourselves to achieve what's going to happen on Wednesday night. We had to research and investigate so that we could achieve the light parade. And actually, at the moment, we don't know how it's going to go. Hopefully, it's going to be brilliant. But once we've got that equipment, once we're prepared, then we've got to go out and use it for everybody else. So who do we serve? Who is our neighbour? James very succinctly puts it in his letter in 1:27. What God the Father considers... Sorry, next one. What God the Father considers to be pure religion is this: to take care of widows and orphans in their suffering, and to keep oneself from being corrupted by the world. Now, widows and orphans, I think it sounds fairly sort of old-fashioned and quite biblical, but what does that mean? That means people who are suffering, you know, single mums struggling to get by, children who are lost in the world. We're sort of given that instruction, and again, Jesus sort of tells us the same thing in the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10, 37. Here's a guy who comes up to him who knows the law very well, and he comes up to Jesus and he says, "Who's my neighbour?" And this is what Jesus says in reply. Jesus answered, "There was once a man who was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when robbers attacked him, stripped him and beat him up, leaving him half dead. It so happened that a priest was going down the road, but when he saw the man, he walked by on the other side. In the same way, a Levite also came along, went over and looked at the man, and then walked on by on the other side. But a Samaritan, who was travelling that way, came upon the man. When he saw him, his heart was filled with pity. He went over to him, poured oil and wine on his wounds, bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own animal and took him to an inn where he took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Take care of him,' he told the innkeeper, 'and when I come back this way, I will pay you whatever else you spend on him.'" And Jesus concluded, "In your opinion, which one of these three acted like a neighbour towards the man attacked by robbers?" The teacher of the law answered, "The one who was kind to him." Jesus replied, "You go then and do the same." And I think it's important in that passage, the two people that did nothing were not people who were ignorant of what the Bible said. They knew the law, they knew what was said, and yet they chose not to help. The person that helped was actually someone that, well, Samaritan, they were looked down upon by everybody else in Israel. And I think we have to do what Jesus says there. We have to go out and do what Samaritan did, help people, invest in people. You know, he used his own money, he poured his wine on oil on the person that had been hurt. It's not something that is easy, but at the same time, we kind of have to think about it, and it kind of has to become second nature. Now, over the last couple of weeks, Lou spoke at the Harvest Festival about the Trust of Trust and all that they do and the need that they have. So when I was talking to Steve about this sermon and what I should say, we were talking about how, you know, where is the need? And I think one of the things that we can be quite guilty of is that we wait to hear this voice from God that says, "You must go and help this person," or "You must go and help this cause." Actually, the prophecy that we're looking for is in the newspapers. It's on the news. It's all around us. We just have to open our eyes and be willing to see it. You know, the Karl Barth said, our name is quoted slightly, but said that we should have a Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other, because that is where we will see where the need is. And we won't always, and I'm not saying that we won't get one, but we won't always get that call from God to say, "Go and help someone." We'll just see it around us. Already, this winter, and if any of you were in Italy yesterday, would have seen the snow. It's not yet December, November. That already this winter has been tipped as being incredibly harsh. And Gloucester City Mission are already planning for the trials of that's going to bring. So if we look at our community around us, we will see the need that we're called to help them. We just have to be willing to look for it. And as I said at the beginning, I'm as bad as the next person at not looking. You know, you see the guys walking through Gloucester, you see them with their own cups and things, asking for money, and so many times you walk past just thinking, "Oh, someone else is doing it." But if we all did it, it wouldn't be a problem. Now, I guess the other thing is, why should we do it? So what happens next? If we set out to do what the Bible tells us, with some sort of preconceived idea, I'm thinking of the light parade. If we go and help at the light parade and expect that the following Sunday there's going to be an extra 50 people sat in this room, and then they're not here, often we can be disappointed. We've done what the Bible says, but where's the fruit? Where's what? You know, where have we seen the results of all that hard work and effort? Well, that's not the point of doing it. You know, if we go and help at the Y, I'm always there on Friday night, if we go and help at the Y on Friday night and there's not 10 more kids in the youth group on the Sunday, we've not failed. And I think sometimes that can be our, we're missing it. If you can go to the next slide, sorry. You know, it's not about targets. It's not like my job in sales where if I don't get my targets, I get told off. It's about doing it because it needs to be done. There's a great Greek proverb, which I really like, which is, wise men plant trees under whose shade they will never sit. If they didn't plant them, because they're not going to see the result of the shade, no one would ever plant any trees and no one would ever have any shade to sit under. And that's the same with what we do as Christians. We should be going out not to see a result ourselves necessarily, but to plant the seed so that there can be results. And if we're always disappointed because that metric that we set for success in our own head didn't hit, then we'll stop doing things, and that's sort of not the point. A few months ago, Steve and I went to quite an interesting meal when we were invited by the Gideons. And it was quite a nice meal. It wasn't unpleasant. It was in a little hotel near Cheltenham. And, you know, we went to see what they did. And it was all going fine until sort of after the meal, it turned into sort of a timeshare sales pitch. You know, are you going to sign up? I'm not sure. Oh, well, I'll give you a call in a couple of weeks and see. It kind of felt that we were being sold something. And also it felt that they'd been set targets that they had to achieve. If you come along to this meal, you have to sign up 4 people, otherwise you fail. And I don't think that's the message that we're getting from the Bible. You can go to the next slide, Sarah. In the Matthew 25 again, he's popular today, 34 to 41, Jesus says this. He says, he will put the righteous people on his right. Come, you that are blessed by my Father, come and possess the kingdom which has been prepared for you ever since the creation of the world. I was hungry and you fed me. Thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you received me in your homes. Naked and you clothed me. Sick and you took care of me. In prison and you visited me. The righteous will then answer him, when, Lord, did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we ever see you a stranger and welcome you in our homes, or naked and clothed you? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? The king will reply, I tell you, whenever you did this for one of the least important of these members of my family, you did it for me. Then he will say to those on his left, away from me, you that are under God's curse, away to the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. I was hungry and you did not feed me. Thirsty, but you would not give me a drink. I was a stranger, but you would not welcome me in your homes. Naked, but you would not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, but you would not take care of me. Then they will answer, when, Lord, did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and not help you? And the king will reply, I tell you, whenever you refuse to help one of the least important ones, you refuse to help me. So that those that did it did not do it because of a reward that they were waiting for. In fact, they didn't even realise that they'd done it. You know, they just, it had become second nature to them. It was just natural. It was the natural thing to do. In Hebrew, it's summed up with just quite a simple line. Remember to welcome strangers into your homes. There were some who did this and welcomed angels without knowing it. It's just, it becomes second nature. You don't even think about it. Just, you do it naturally. And because of that, I wanted to finish, and thank you, Nick, for letting me. I wanted to finish with a story of something that happened very recently. and I hope I get all the facts right, but Nick and Sandra were driving along the A40 near Churchill a couple of weeks ago now. And I think Nick saw something come out into the road and caught your eye as she was driving along. And then saw that a man had collapsed on the side of the road. Turned the car around in 2 minutes, I believe you worked today, says, and got back to him. And there was no pulse, no breathing, so it started CPR. Another friend of theirs spotted Pete's car and stopped as well and started helping. And they kept doing the CPR until the ambulance arrived. And it was an air ambulance and ambulance cars, but the whole works arrived to help. But Nick and this man had been doing CPR all that time. Now, they got him to hospital, and I think he briefly came round and was able to speak to see his family. But sadly, he still passed away about a week later. Now, the outcome, I know, is not what any of us, if we were in that circumstance, would ever want. But what Nick, Sandra, and that other gentleman, Scott, did, they did not because they were necessarily going to see the right outcome, but because it was the right thing to do. And had they not stopped, he wouldn't have necessarily made it to hospital alive at all. He wouldn't necessarily have come around even for a brief time. But we do it because it's the right thing to do. And so often, it's also the hardest thing to do, because there can be disappointment and tragedy in the things that we do. But we have to still do it. And we do it because we've been given something so precious that to share it is the only thing that we can possibly do with it. To hide it away would just be a waste. So I think we're told so often, and as I said, I could do so much better at this than myself, but we have to put our faith into action, otherwise it could be dead. And that's that. So just to conclude, I'd just like to pray. I pray that we can have the strength and bravery to put our faith into action, even when it seems so difficult to do. I pray that when we see a need, we will act upon it. And I pray that we will open our eyes so that we see those needs around us, so that we can help in whatever way that we can, however small, however large, but that we are willing to put ourselves out there and help those that are in need.